evening I'm going to continue with this series of talks that I've been doing on the five precepts. And we're now on precept number four, which is the precept of not lying and speaking the truth. And some people say that after not killing, the first precept is not killing, the second is not stealing, the third is no sexual misconduct, the fourth is no lying, and the fifth is no intoxication. Of the five precepts, people say that the first, not killing, and the fourth, not lying, are the most important ones. And some people say that the Buddha said that, pointing at the importance of this precept of not lying, he said, for someone who can tell a deliberate lie and feel no shame, they're capable of any transgression at all. So anything else can follow from that. So a little background about this now. The precepts fit under a category of Buddhist teachings called sila, which usually is interpreted as virtue, translated as virtue. And virtue is considered very important in Buddhist practice, and for many reasons. But I'll give two today. One is that it's the foundation for the rest of Buddhist spiritual life. Living a virtuous life and developing, not just living a virtuous life in terms of our actions, but developing ourselves as a virtuous person. And because it creates a kind of clarity, it creates a kind of integrity that makes it a lot easier to sit down and feel not conflicted, feel at ease and feel at peace with oneself. So, for example, in meditation, you could go settle much more deeply. But sometimes ethics, or this virtue, is presented as being a foundation for the rest of Buddhism. And people think of it as, well, it's kind of like a foundation, like maybe kindergarten is a foundation for grade school, or kindergarten is a foundation for graduate school. And so, well, you know, it's the kind of remedial stuff, that ethics stuff, and, you know, I'm basically ethical, and, you know, I'm ready for Buddhist graduate school. Let's get on to the more important things. Or it's a foundation, like a foundation of a pyramid. It provides a great, big, strong base where this high pyramid can be built. But, you know, the idea is to get off the base, you know, and get on to the more important things higher up, the top of the pyramid. But ethics is considered a foundation, and some people will spend a lot of time clearing up or cultivating a strong sense of integrity prior to developing a meditation practice, prior to anything else they do in practice. But it's not really meant as a remedial thing or something like that, because and this is the second reason, you know, for virtue ethics. And that is that realization, the spiritual maturity, converges with virtue. Or to say it a little differently, that the spiritual maturation in Buddhism is expressed or manifested in virtue, with being virtuous. And it isn't a self-conscious virtue, isn't because it's an effort to try to think, oh, what should I do here that's appropriate, so much as it is that it becomes an expression of who we are. And then some Buddhists are very fond of saying, well, actually, all of us have a pure ethical core, virtuous core, and it's a matter of somehow relaxing or letting go of that which obscures that. But that's really our nature. And so when we talk about living ethically in Buddhism, we're not talking about imposing something on top of ourselves, like commandments or something, but rather we're talking about revealing or awakening something that's innately who we are. So in some sense, this is especially true with truth, becoming truthful, that someone who becomes realized, someone who attains realization, is someone who attains the truth, both in the abstract, but more importantly in Buddhism, is not the abstract philosophical idea of truth, but truth in the sense of they become a true person. They become a real person. Realization makes you real. So the idea of truth converging, ethics converging with realization, is a very important one in Buddhism. So, and then some teachers say, well, actually, if you want to be realized, one of the ways to attain that is to act as if it's already true. So if it was already true, what would it look like? Well, you'd be ethical. So start acting that way. So the fourth precept is not lying. And not lying, the converse of that, is the opposite of that, is being truthful. But when I was thinking about this today, I was thinking that I like the word being honest or honesty more than being truthful. And I was kind of curious about why I thought that. What is it about honesty, that word? Because when I think of the word honesty, I feel refreshed. I feel kind of lighter, more refreshed, clear. And truth seems a little bit heavy to me, cumbersome word, even though it's a great word, wonderful word. It's a wonderful idea. And maybe because truth to me, the word kind of associated with finding out what is true, some idea of what's true, and seeking something. Whereas honesty, I think of as a quality people have. You can say someone is true, but that's not such doesn't come off that my, you know, isn't a common part of my vocabulary. But to say to someone's honest, that's easy to say. So then, because I was curious about this difference between my association with truth and honesty, I looked up in the dictionary the word honesty. And I was surprised by what I saw, what I read. And I found out I didn't know what honesty meant. So that was a little bit embarrassing. But it's the honest truth. I thought I knew. You see, you never know. You should never think you know what's true. You know the story, probably another story of Mara. Mara is the Buddhist kind of devil. And Mara's job description is to prevent people from getting enlightened. So Mara was out with his attendant, and they saw a Buddhist monk doing a walking meditation, meditating. And then at some point the monk saw something and realized something, you know, saw something. Oh, and I see the truth, the monk said, and was very happy. And then Mara's attendant, you know, said to Mara, "Hey, are you going to do something about that? Aren't you worried about that? You know, he saw something true." And he said, "Oh no, don't worry about that. Before long, he'll turn it into a belief." So honesty is the character or quality of being honest. So again, we're talking about a quality, how we are. So this idea of the converging, ethics, is realization is that converges with virtue, with integrity, who we are, qualities of who we are. So honesty is a character of being honest. Then it goes on and says, uprightness of conduct in general, justice and fairness. But here's a definition of honest. Number one definition of honest is fair and candid in dealing with others. True, just, upright, trustworthy. So I don't know, that surprised me. I thought being honest was being truthful, more or less. Free from fraud, it says here, as definition number three. Another definition of it is characterized by openness or sincerity, being frank. So is that what you guys thought honesty meant? Did I just kind of slow in learning these words? Yeah, okay, well, I was associated with being honest as being saying what's true, and it turns out it's much more than that. And those qualities that they're much more than that are, you know, being upright, trustworthy, fair, candid with dealing with others. All those qualities to me make me feel, when I think about being that way, I feel lighter. And I think that's one of the things that's so wonderful about truth or honesty. In my association with it, in a way, it makes me feel lighter. And when and one of the things that's happened to me as I've practiced, in the years that I've practiced, is that I have noticed that I very more and more appreciate that very immediate, almost inner sense of lightness, clarity, openness, ease, peace that is possible. And as I get more sense of that, I also at the same time want less and less to disturb that or to transgress against that or to cover it over or substitute that with heaviness and darkness and sense of conflict. And when I think of lying, generally I think of something that is going to go against that. It's going to be kind of heavy and conflicted. I love the little expression that says, it's easier to tell the truth because then you have less to remember. But probably some of you had the experience of telling a lie and then having to cover the lie with a lie, and so on and on it goes. And you have to remember what you said. Now these qualities of kind of lightness, openness, clarity, peacefulness, delight, freedom that can come with practice are not conceptual ideas. They don't belong to the world of thoughts and ideas per se. They could be manifested in how we think. Thinking can be easeful, restful kind of thinking, but it's not. It's not something of thoughts. This is a very important thing to realize, because the more we kind of drop into the fullness of who we are, become aware of the fullness of our being, the body being in our body, in our hearts, and kind of fill out beyond the world of our thinking all the time, the more we can actually tap into qualities that we would like to preserve, qualities that we would like to respect and honor. The more we stay in the world of thinking, the narrow, constricted world of thinking, the easier I think it is to be unethical, the easier it is to lie. Because then it becomes just a lot, if you're in the world of thinking all the time, then it becomes just a logical thing. Oh, well, you know, it's okay to lie sometimes. People do it all the time, and, you know, there's all these great examples. You read the newspaper every day, people are lying all the time. So, you know, I can do it. Or, I mean, it's all kinds of lawyers in the mind that can argue for why you know it's okay to lie. And so if your only reference for whether you should or shouldn't be ethical or shouldn't lie is in the world of your thinking, and that's where you're negotiating it, you actually have, it's very limited, the reference point you have for making a decision. But if your decision is something much bigger and broader for who you are, the chances are you'll be a much more ethical person. As I said maybe a few weeks ago, in brief now, is that it seems that people who have very strongly developed mindfulness of the body tend to be much more ethical than people that don't. So rather than ethics coming from, you know, taking a class in philosophy and being able to argue out, you know, ethical arguments, actually being more in your body makes a person more ethical, but makes a person ethical. So to have, we're talking about qualities of who we are. And so that also points to the idea that Buddhist ethics is not coming from the outside in, but from the inside out. So to become true from the inside out, to become honest and upright from the inside out, and to live that way. So the precept is not lying. not to lie. Rather than saying that the precept is be truthful or be honest. And part of the reason for stating it negatively, some people protest, oh, I don't want the precept to be negative. It's always so negative what you shouldn't do. And these Buddhists, they're such a party poopers. They talk about suffering and they tell me what I can't do. But one of the reasons to be stated in negative terms is that it's actually clearer than saying be truthful or be honest. It's sometimes hard to know what is truthful. Whereas it might be hard to know what's truthful, it could be easier to know what's a lie. So, you know, if you're not sure what's truthful, then maybe you don't say anything. So I'm proposing here that it's easier standard, it's more clear standard, don't tell a lie, because that you can recognize, even if you can't recognize so clearly what you should say or what the truth is. I'm also fond of this idea that Robert Akinroshi, a Zen teacher, says that in Chinese, the expression, the Chinese characters for not lying, apparently is have no neglectful speech. So it's a little bit, you know, again, it doesn't mean the same thing exactly as not lying, in my mind at least, but it points to this idea of no neglectful speech. Pay attention to your speech. Be mindful of it. I believe that one of the most powerful doors you have for spiritual growth, for personal growth, to understand yourself really well, to clarify your life, to liberate your life, is to look at your speech, how you speak. Look at how you speak, what you speak about, and most important, look at what motivates your speech. Look at what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of people, it's been said, that people choose their clothes more carefully than they choose their words. But if you were, and some people say, well, I don't want to spend much time choosing my words as I do choose my clothes, because I would never speak. It would take a long time. But to pause or be mindful or have enough clarity to know what you're going to say before you say it is a very, very powerful spiritual tool. Because you'll learn about yourself and you'll know, you have a chance of seeing what motivates you. And it's very humbling to start noticing what motivates speech. Is it really an expression of compassion or kindness or helpfulness? Is it really a conveying of information? Or is it something else? So if you say, for example, I went to the best Thai restaurant yesterday. What are you trying to convey in that? Is it really the best? How could you know? have you done a survey of all the Thai restaurants? Is it kind of an exaggeration? Or is it kind of just a colloquial way of saying it was great? Is that all it means? But how often do we use just superlatives to talk about what we're doing? Not so much because it was a great experience, but because maybe it's a way of defining ourselves by it. If I say that I had a great vacation, then it's like, oh, you don't want to say I had a lousy vacation. This is kind of like, oh, well, I guess you chose the wrong place to go or something. Often how we choose our speech says a lot about who we're trying to convey, how we're trying to represent ourselves to others, who we're trying to be in relationship to others, just like with clothes sometimes. So if you look carefully at what motivates your speech, you'll find a lot about self-image, self-concept, who you think the other people are, and what you're trying to accomplish in speech. So a very important practice is to see what motivates your speech. And in looking at what motivates our speech, then we can also see, what is the soil out of which our speech is rising out of? What's the mood, the emotional tone? What's our bodily feeling that we're speaking in? Because if we're stressed, if we're angry, if we're feeling discontent, if we're afraid, we're much more likely to speak a certain way, see the world in certain ways, If we're feeling happy, content, compassionate, peaceful, we're more likely to see the world in a different way. And our speech is very much influenced by our mood and where we are at. So again, just to pause long enough to pay attention. What's going on here around my speech? How am I feeling? What's going on? What's my motivation? It's very important. So lies. So what prompts lies? Or deceit, or duplicity, or distortion, or fabrication, or fraud, or misrepresentation, or falsification, or forgery, or perjury, or exaggeration. It's a nice list. All are considered forms of lying. What prompts that? What is it, or conditions that you're more likely to do that? In a simple way, we could say people lie because they want to get something. They want something to happen. They want to get something, or they want to stop something. They want to prevent something. But what are some of the things we want to get and some of the things we want to stop? Sometimes what we want to stop is harm to ourselves or harm to someone. We're afraid. And so we lie to protect ourselves. And sometimes we lie to protect ourselves because the harm is real. And sometimes we lie because the harm is not exactly real, but the harm is not to our real, to our integrity or who we are in some deep way, but the harm is to our the idea of who we are, our egotistical ideas, to our ego. And so we want to protect our ego. I don't want to be, you know, I want to make sure everybody sees me in my full egotistical glory. So selfish ambition can be a motivation for lying. Sometimes a need to prove oneself, to define oneself, to show, you know, who we are, to defend oneself is a motivation to lie for some people. Some people will lie in order to be admired and because they want to be seen well. Fear, anger can be causes for lies. But there's another interesting motivation for lying. And that is to spare people's feelings. You know, so you're trying to take care of people. And someone comes up to you and says, you know, maybe at a party, and they say, what do you think of this, my dress? And, you know, it's an awful dress. But, you know, what do you do? You say, well, you know, nice weather we're having today. I once read an example. It was an example, a fictional example of someone. I think that it was supposed to be the professor in the little dialogue was Immanuel Kant, because Kant was very keen. He's a great example of someone's teachings, is that you should never lie. No, any cost at all, you shouldn't lie. So then someone had this dialogue. The professor comes to a wedding and asks the groom. The groom asks the professor, well, what do you think of my bride? And the professor says, well, I could see that you didn't marry her for her beauty. And I spent some time talking to her, and I could see you didn't marry her for her intellect. And I didn't spend that much time with her, so, you know, there might have been qualities of kindness or something there that I would have discerned if I spent more time with her. He's being honest, right? didn't have to necessarily lie to not say those things, but, you know, just to be dedicated to truthfulness at all costs is pretty, can be painful. So in Buddhism, what they say, Buddha said, the criteria for speaking is it truthful, and is it useful, and is it kind, and is it timely? So kind of, it's sometimes summed up as truth, is it truthful and is it useful? So I don't know if it's useful to tell the groom that. It might be true, but... But then another example is, that also is given kind of ethics books, is if someone is going to a party, and before they go, they show you a dress. Say, what do you think of this dress? You might say, oh, I don't think that's appropriate. I don't think that's a very nice dress or whatever. But once you're at the party, you meet them at the party, and they ask you, what do you think of the dress? it's not really appropriate, or it's not so useful. Maybe. So what do you? So, I don't know if you need to lie, but the flowers on the dress are really nice. Well stitched. Well, you don't want to be too transparent. But is it sometimes appropriate to lie? This evening before I came here, I was helping my son brush his teeth, and he asked me in the bathroom, he said, do you like baseball? You've been through all these sports. Do you like baseball? Do you like soccer? And I knew I was coming down here to talk about, right speech or being truthful. And I said to him, well, I said yes. But I realized that, the truthful answer to a seven-year-old, I think, is different than a truthful answer to a grown-up around that question. Because, I kind of like baseball, but, if one of you asked me, do you like baseball? Oh, yeah, that's fine. It's fun sometimes, and it's really fun to do with my son. But that would have been a really terrible thing to have said to my son. He lives for baseball. it's his religion. Or whatever, it's like life, it's what life is. And his father needs to show some enthusiasm. So I wasn't lying when I said, yeah, I like it. But, it felt like, it wasn't quite the same way. I would say a different answer to grown-ups, or, to him. Was it a lie? Was it not? So are there times we have expression white lies? What does white lies mean? Does white lie mean that it doesn't matter, or white lie means that it's for a good cause? What? Harmless. White lies are harmless, yeah. So lies for a good cause, are they harm? Are they called? What, they're called something else? There's no term for that, right?
Propaganda.
Well, the Immanuel Kant example, which is kind of modernized down through the ages, is if someone's being chased by bandits who are going to, pirates, and they're going to kill him, and he comes into your house to hide, and the pirates come to your door and say, is he here in your house? What would you say? And if, would you lie and say, no, he's not here, to save his life? Or would you say, oh yeah, he's in the back room? Well, it's funny, but Immanuel Kant says you should tell him where the truth. What do you think of that? The famous philosopher. He says, you're not responsible for the person's death then, but you should always tell the truth. Is that right? I mean, most people would say, in that circumstance, you lie. That's not propaganda, I don't think, is it? So when is it appropriate to lie? It's an interesting question. I think it's a very interesting question. However, I also believe that people are much too quick, like I did tonight, to bring up the question of when, if ever, is appropriate to lie, rather than focusing on not lying. See the difference? Because maybe once in a really rare moment it's appropriate to lie. But it's so rare that maybe we'd better spend most of our time focusing on just learning how not to lie to begin with. The inappropriate times that are, we're not transgressing a precept, but we're harming ourselves in lying. And that's part of the insight of Buddhism, is when we do ethical transgressions, we're actually harming ourselves. In some way, we're harming ourselves in doing that. And that's kind of saves or liberates Buddhist ethics from being moralistic, because you know, really focusing on what brings benefit and avoiding harm. There's one place where I can say with confidence, it's never appropriate to lie. You should never lie. There's no exceptions. So maybe some of you will come up with an exception. So it'd be nice if you know you rose to the challenge. But I would say there's one place, one situation we should absolutely never lie, no matter what. And that is, you should never lie to yourself. Ever. And part of the function of a practice like mindfulness practice is learn how to speak the truth to yourself. I think of mindfulness, in the past, not that to me think it now, but in the past I always thought that honesty was a synonym for mindfulness. But now that honesty is a much more bigger concept, maybe it still should be considered a synonym. But that honesty is a synonym for mindfulness. That the quest in mindfulness is how to be truthful. And that's two things. It's to be able to recognize what is true, to see what is really going on in the moment. But it's also learning to see what's truthful, but it's also a willingness to see what's truthful, to have the capacity to see what's truthful. And both are necessary. Because sometimes we delude ourselves, we hide from ourselves, we don't look at it, we have blinders on for ourselves. And I've been surprised a number of times in my life to realize after the fact that I didn't realize what was going on. I didn't know what was motivating me. I didn't know what the truth was in the situation with myself. And it took a lot of attention, it took a lot of care, it took a lot of settling in myself to be able to see what was really going on with my feelings, with my motivations, and with my attachments and various things. So the mindfulness practice is a practice of becoming truthful, learning not to lie, learning not to be deceptive, learning not to hide, learning not to be deluded. And so I'm very fond of the idea that if you're dedicating a practice that's meant to create honesty, then you don't want to be dishonest. Because you're obscuring, you're kind of counteracting the very movement you're trying to do with the practice of becoming more and more honest. One of the qualities that I associate with honesty is being transparent. And for a couple of years, when I was living at a Buddhist center, one of the practices I had was maybe it was a year. I should be honest here. I had the conscious practice of if anybody asked me about myself, anything about me, that I would be an open book. And I would just tell them whatever it was, no matter how embarrassing or how much I didn't want to tell them or wanted to not. I would just practice being an open book. And I loved it. It was so great because it made this transparency, this ease. I mean, sometimes it wasn't nice. Sometimes I had to struggle, and sometimes I did feel embarrassed, and sometimes, you know, I worried a little bit what people were going to think of me. But the idea of kind of pushing that edge of being an open book, there's one way of pushing the edge of being honest and truthful, letting people know who you are directly. Being an open book for me is to live without conflict. I mean not all conflict, but inner conflict, to struggle with who we are, but just to kind of put it all out there. Some years ago, I went to a meeting of very senior American Zen teachers. I've been practicing Zen for 25, 30, 40 years. They went around the room And they talked about, I don't remember exactly the theme, but they talked about their own relationship to Zen practice. What was difficult about it and what was beautiful about it. And as they talked, it went around the room. The one quality that stood out to me was that was how transparent they were. How they were so willing to talk about their foibles, their shortcomings, their difficulties. And they were unselfconscious, maybe that's not right, undefended. They were at ease. They weren't troubled. They weren't ashamed. I mean, this is the things they felt they had to work with and practice with. But they weren't, you know, hiding it or being ashamed or, you know, struggling with it. They were very, this is who I am. I have this struggle. This is who I am. And that kind of just clarity. This, you know, the undefended, unapologetic, just, this is who I am. That kind of, that level of honesty, I think was so beautiful. That's what 40 years of Zen practice does to someone. Wow, that's pretty neat. You think that's supposed to make them perfect, right? Perfectly transparent. Some years ago, but 10 years ago now, I was teaching a retreat, and there was a person who was a brand new teacher trainer. She was being trained to be a Vipassana teacher. And so she, the first time, she was on the other side, you know, the teacher side, watching what was going on, rather than being a student. And so, and she was also a therapist, and many years of being a therapist, and many years as a Buddhist practitioner. But part of the idea of being a teacher trainer, one of the tasks you have is to sit in on interviews between the retreatant and the teacher to see how interviews are done and see what the different issues that come up and learn from that by witnessing what goes on. And so she was sitting in on my interviews, and we went through a morning of interviews, I don't know, about 8 interviews probably. And at the end of the 8th interview, I turned to her and said, you know, what was that? How was that for you? And she said, I don't believe it. I've been a therapist for many years, and these people came in, you'd never seen them before, some of them. This is the first interview in the retreat. They've been sitting for a couple, 2 or 3 days. You only had 15 minutes with them. And the degree of self-exposure and undefensiveness is equivalent to what it takes in therapy a year. An hour a week. It's been a year before you get to that point. And what she attributed it to was that something happens in the retreat context. In the retreat, when you're meditating all day, practicing honesty all day, committed to being present for what's really going on, and really start seeing what's going on in some very honest way, it begins peeling away some of the armor, some of the barriers, some of the hesitation, some of the reluctance. So we become cleaner, open, more willing, less defended, hopefully in a very helpful way, so that who we really are can flow from us freely or honestly or easily. So what people get from us is who we are. We're being true. Even if we're having trouble, difficulties. We're not hiding it. We're undefended. So not lying. Not lying can also mean that, or being truthful can also mean that we allow people just to see us who we really are. The good and the bad. Not being afraid of that. There's one more interesting area. A couple of other things I want to say about this precept of not lying. That's interesting. To keep pushing the edges of it, of what it means. And one of them, that is that if you blame someone else for how you're feeling, I don't think you're being accurate. If you're blaming someone else for how you're feeling, that's not accurate. So what do you think of that? What do you mean? That no good, lousy, you know, bum. You know, let me tell you what he did to me. Of course I'm feeling angry or afraid because of him. That's the whole topic in itself. It's almost out of time, but I think one of the core teachings of Buddhism, which is very challenging. So I offer it to you as a challenge, not something that you can accept. But it's this very thing that your suffering is something that you shouldn't blame anybody else for outside of yourself. The idea is to take responsibility for yourself and find how we contribute, how we add up, how we are the movements of our heart and mind are what causes suffering. So to give a very silly example, you know, it's like if I say, I think that people who wear pants are really silly. Yeah. So when you hear me say that, probably most of you just washed it off, right? But if you hear, now I feel, you know, uncomfortable, I feel off, and I feel so awkward and difficult, you know, and I feel, you know, upset and, you know, ashamed. And Gil made me that way. I didn't make you to feel all those feelings. You felt that because of the way you picked up that, you heard that and what you did with it. You took it in some way and transformed it into something that defined yourself, or, you know, you did something with it. The statement doesn't say anything. So that's a silly example, but someone can say something much more serious. And still, it's the way you take it in, what you do with it, that you have to take responsibility for. The precept of not lying is classically also explained as including avoiding all unwise speech, all wrong speech, which is defined as not only as being lying, but also as being harsh speech, slanderous speech, and idle speech. And to talk about slander. Slander, you know, again, you can look at what motivates slander. And sometimes what motivates is just the motivation to cause harm. I'll tell you a story from the Jewish tradition. A man comes to the rabbi and is a little bit distraught because he's been involved in slanderous speech. And he asks the rabbi, how can I make up for the slander? And the rabbi says, oh, okay. This is what you have to do. Go to the market and buy a chicken. And bring it here to me. But on the way here, pluck it for me. So just pluck it and throw the feathers away and bring it, pluck the chicken. Okay, I can do that. I guess he thought some kind of ritual is going to, you know, absolve him from his slanderous speech, right? So a strange ritual, but he went, got his chicken, and then he, you know, was plucking it on the way back, and plucking and throwing feathers away. And then he finally got back to the rabbi with a cleanly plucked chicken. Here. And then, what do I have to do now? And the rabbi says, oh, well, now you have to go back to the market, and on the way back, you have to retrieve all the feathers. And the guy said, well, that's impossible. Can't do that. So it's the same with slander. You can't really make up for it. It spreads out into the world, and you can't go back and make amends because you don't know how it travels and where it goes. William Blake said, a truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. So there's also truth that we use as a weapon. Be careful with that. It doesn't matter who you know. It doesn't matter how much you know. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It doesn't matter how rich you are. It doesn't matter what you look like. It does matter how much you tell yourself the truth. I hope that truth-telling for you all becomes a way of feeling lighter, clear, cleaner, happier, more peaceful. Thank you.